Welcome into this week's edition of Riddle and the Reporter, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook, live every single Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Junie Riddle, Nick Keezer in today, Connor Newt back in the producing chair, and a lot of things to get into. Preds get a huge 4-1 victory against the Rangers in Madison Square Garden. The Vols are going to be heading to Tuscaloosa to take on the Alabama Crimson Tide tomorrow. And although the Titans are on a bye week, we will be diving into their situation and what they are going to be getting into during this week and how can they rebound after a 2-4 start to the season. But we are going to kick off today's show with some headlines. The Jags go to New Orleans on Thursday night football.
I don't want to talk about it.
Beat the Saints. Beat your Saints.
I don't want to talk about it.
31-24.
Moreau, catch the damn ball.
Okay. You got to give that guy a break.
Oh.
You got to. I mean, it wasn't a perfect pass. He had to extend for it. And again, the guy literally was dealing with cancer in the offseason. The guy had cancer in the offseason,
okay,
and he's making a comeback in the NFL, and you're going to get mad that he dropped a pass?
That's news to me, actually.
He beat cancer,
that is
Keezer.
News. That is news to me. I apologize.
He had Hodgins lymphoma during free agency, beat it, and came back to play in the league this season.
What emotional.
And now all these Saints fans like you are getting upset. Because he dropped a pass. That wasn't even that great of a throw by Derek Carr.
He was wide open.
He was wide open. He didn't have to dive for the ball.
Whatever.
When you're sitting that wide open in the end zone, the quarterback's
going to
hit
line.
You in the chest.
The game was on the line. You can understand my frustration for
sure. I understand your frustration.
Okay, that's all.
But
that's
telling you, it's not warranted.
Whatever.
It's not warranted. And plus, the Jags, I mean, the Saints, you know, they were coming back there in the fourth quarter.
I would have been happy if they had knocked them off, though.
But the Jags deserve to win that game. In my opinion, I think the Jags
blew it. They blew it. Did you see how long that they had a lead until the very end of the game, dude?
Well, yeah. I mean, I felt like they deserved to win, and they made the plays at the very end. I mean, did the Saints, even though they went, I mean, they were down by 8. Saints go down and score 2-point conversion, tie it, and then what happened? You let Christian Kirk just waltz into the end zone.
Well, I was going to say, Christian Kirk's the one that made the magic happen. So, I mean, there you go. But, look, it's fine. It's fine. Look, the Saints will be all right. It's a tough road. But, anyway, look, bad play. It was not perfect. The throw was not perfect. That is okay. I recognize that, Junie. However, Moreau, you got to have that, my man.
He does.
I know what you battled now. I apologize.
So cut him a break, and the dude, he was devastated on the sideline.
I'm getting a lot of texts on my personal text line, by the way, that are saying go Saints regardless, so it's fine.
Look, go, hey.
You're still a horrible person.
No, Connor, you hush.
Either way, Jags are sitting at 5-2, their first place in the AFC South. And are you starting to get worried, like, for the Titans' sake, are you starting to get worried that the Jags are who a lot of the national media – and I'm not gonna name names, but your boy was big on the Jags in the offseason. Are they starting to turn into the team that we feared that they could be?
I think so. Look, they were a very confident squad, and they have the weapons, and we still need to see some of them get going. Personally, if you ask me, I still think that there's another level for some of their wideouts, and quite frankly, too, I'm pretty happy with Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby. I think they are great, great stalwarts back there in the backfield that will be a problem for a long time. And quite frankly, I think Tank, and I love that name for a running back. It's awesome. But I think he will end up taking over that job when the time is right. But look, anyway, and also on our text line, I have someone that's backing me as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You got two hands on it. All right, Junie, I get another bit of support, but also, look.
Maybe I just feel too – maybe I'm too sympathetic. Listen, I'm not a fan. If it was a Steelers player, maybe I would feel differently about it.
Right.
But I just am like, man, the guy battled back. It wasn't a perfect pass.
Right.
Sure, should he have caught it? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he should have. But yeah. I would give the guy a break.
Yes.
I would give the guy a break.
That's fine. So, anyway, that was a good game for the Jags and the AFC South. Standpoint, they start looking more like what we anticipated them to look like, which is good for them. So, but
and look, I want to bring this up. I'm going to bring this up.
Fine.
We don't have to dive into it.
All right.
But remember in the offseason, you said you would take Tannehill over Trevor Lawrence.
I did.
Are we starting to regret saying that?
I don't think regret is the right word because a lot of things have changed.
Okay, but can we admit that that was
I don't think it's as good of a take.
Oh my gosh.
But I still stand by what Tannehill would be if he was healthy. That's just me.
He's been healthy. He just got hurt and he still
You're asking me on a Friday at the very middle of a bye week. They're not prepping for anything right now. He's still recovering. There's still a chance he could play. However, I seriously doubt it.
Yeah.
But look, it is what it is.
We'll get into the Titans a little bit later. Yes. Another big headline that I saw today was Michigan and Jim Harbaugh in the headlines again. Apparently, he has been sending out a scout called the name of Connor. What is it? Stallions?
Stallions.
And apparently this guy has been going to the Michigan opposing teams the week before and going and stealing their hand signals to try and tip off Michigan so that they know what is coming.
I'd love to know how it got tipped off that someone was watching.
I don't know that either.
That's where my mind goes because it's like –
I mean, this has Patriots Spygate written all
over
it.
Oh, that is good comparison. I didn't even think about that this morning. When I heard this, I just thought how sus Harbaugh was because he has all this free time. Yeah, sure, you're at home cutting the grass.
Yeah, and this is what reminds me of Spygate because what Spygate was they would go to opposing teams and film their practices.
I remember.
This is going to the opposing team and kind of looking at their hand signals because we know in the NFL, it's all communicated through the headset. A lot of colleges don't do that.
They do signs and
hand signals. And
they
all
get like
stuff.
A box of cereal. They're like, all right. Here we go.
Yeah, Michael Scott's face.
Tony the Tiger.
anything to tip it off. So apparently Michigan has been getting into that, I think there could be some serious punishment if this comes out to be what they're saying it is.
Yeah.
So Harbaugh has been denying any knowledge of this. If it did happen, I don't know how in the world you can say that you didn't know as the head coach of the program and you're benefiting from it.
Right.
But, flat out, this is not good for college football.
It looks really bad for him because think about what game are we on now? Is he about to come back? I think he had a 6-game suspension, correct?
I believe it was only three or four.
Well, I thought it was six for some reason.
I think it started at
maybe it was.
I think it was a higher number to start at, but it was only
three.
Connor's saying three.
Three. Okay.
That's what I thought. I thought it was only the first couple games. And again, those games were cupcake games. I could have went and coached for Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they still would have won those three games.
I thought it was cool that they let his dad do one of the games, which is really cool. But anyway, so it doesn't look good for Mr. Harbaugh, just strictly based on the fact that he already was under the microscope for what he did already. And look, I think just in general, even in Michigan State, look what's going on over there with them. Gosh, it's just a mess with all the biggest college athletic programs there. And look, I mean, for Michigan, this will be interesting how it plays out because my other question would be, how long has it been going on? Has it only been going on for this season? Has it been going on for years, for months?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole deep dive on this. Obviously, it's an investigation. And so when things this big come out, you have to be very, very cautious with how you go about releasing information, especially when you have factual information. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do, Junie, but that is definitely, I would say, arguably today's biggest headline.
Yeah, so those are our big headlines that we wanted to get into. There's one last thing that I have to talk about because I feel, one, so embarrassed, and this is my release. I have to vent on here about certain things.
Okay.
And I want to know if there are other people like me.
Yes.
Because last night, I'm not going to name the name of the company. I'm not going to name what they were selling.
Ooh.
But essentially, this company was going around door to door, and this was while I wasn't home. My wife set this up. And there was something in our house that we needed replacing. And apparently this company was going around and saying that they were doing free quotes on this. And this, we're like, oh, okay.
You don't want to say the product?
No, I'm not going to say the product.
Okay, fair
enough. So we're going to kind of leave it at that. I want to leave this in the dark.
Okay.
Because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. The people that did come by, I will say this, they were not rude. They were not mean.
Sure.
They were just doing their job.
You could have been rude, though.
I could have been. But either way, so here's what happened. So these people come in. They say they're going to give us a free quote, yada, yada. Long story short, it ended up being a free quote with an ultimatum on it that you had to sign up to get this. And apparently, after doing some research while we were talking to this company, that they are extremely overpriced and that they use like very, how should I say this, hardcore sales tactics. I mean, they were sitting in my living room. When they said that they were going to be here giving me a quote on this,
Junie,
for 30 minutes.
Look, you said it was predatory. Predatory tactics.
Dude, they were in my living room for 3.5 hours.
That is a little sus.
For 3.5 hours. And it's like, then eventually we went on and said that we weren't going to do it. And we dodged a huge bullet because going and doing further research, a lot of people are like, yeah, they charge you double the price.
Yeah, thanks to your wife.
All the things that they said. Well, she actually saved me in the long run because she's right. The one that found this.
Right.
So she recognized her mistake and saved us both because we were actually going to go through and do this.
And then they cut the price in half.
Yeah, they were doing all this sales tactics, trying to stay in. And it's like, I have an 11-month-old. You know, shout out to my son, 11 months today.
Awesome guy.
One month away from his 1 year. But he was about to go to bed. And it's like these guys were doing whatever they could just to stay there, wouldn't leave. And, yeah, they really got me. So I last night, normally when I shoo away sales reps, got duped into this, almost bought into this company.
What was the other one that you had one time, really quick?
Oh, I don't even know. I think it was a cable provider.
Yeah, it was a cable guy.
They
yeah.
rang the doorbell multiple times while my son was laying down for a nap.
Right.
And I just went out there and I was like, dude, hey, I didn't answer the door the first time. Clearly, I don't want to talk to you. So if you could please leave while my son is sleeping, I'd be very happy if you would just get the hell off of my lawn. I was that guy.
Screaming You're the dude from Up.
Yeah. So, or Gran Torino, get off my lawn. Either way. Or you might not be old enough to know that movie.
What movie?
Gran Torino.
Never heard.
You've
of
never
it.
Seen that?
Never.
Homework. Heard. Great movie to go see, Gran Torino.
Yes.
Either way, 615-737-1025. I want to know if you've ever gotten looped in to a sales like Ponzi scheme trying to get you to buy something. Because again, I thought this was going to be a 30-minute get a quote for something that we actually needed
right.
and need to get done with our house.
Fair enough.
And I thought, you know, okay, nice company, nice guys, you know, but they're very respectful.
Yeah.
Coming in, give me a quote. You know, if it's a good price, maybe we'll go with it and kind of weigh our options. That's not what it turned out to
no.
be. And they looped us in. They sucked us in. What's the word? That's not appropriate
you
for
you. You got bamboozled.
They bamboozled me. They looped me in. I don't know. Either way, I want to know if anybody else has had
the only
this
thing
happen
I
to
would,
them.
The only look, I think the only thing I've experienced personally was I've been home alone growing up, teenager, whatever, during high school, and it would always be a lawn company. And I actually had one of my classmates come by my house. He had no idea that I lived there. He was just going door to door. But it's still the worst when someone comes up to your door and they won't leave until hey, here's my card or my packet for all the deals that I can give for you. But also, too, it's just awkward because you're like, yeah, I'm not interested. You can leave. So, yeah, let us know. I would love to hear anyone's crazy stories, outlandish stories. 615-737-1025.
Yeah, because I felt like a total bozo last night, and I just went to bed staring at my ceiling fan being like, Junie, you really allowed that to happen?
By the way, it was $23,000, right, that
yeah.
they offered you?
Yeah, yeah.
Then they're like, hey, let's do half now.
It was definitely something. But either way, I would just like to read some stories. If any of you all have a story to where you got looped into a sales pitch and it's not what you were looking for and you got sucked into it and just being a complete bozo like me, I would love to, you know, kind of feel like I'm not the only one out
right,
there.
For sure.
And I might be.
For
but
sure.
Either way, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Nick and I are going to recap a huge Predators victory on the road at Madison Square Garden against the Rangers. What does this mean for the Preds, and who stood out, and what are some things that we took away from the game? That is coming up next. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
To the right side, Miller, pass blocked as he looked to Kako on the left wing. Smith will be free, and he is free. Back to full and even strength, and the puck comes right to him. Could be a 2-on-0. Smith scores! Cole Smith's got them both. Predators 2, Rangers nothing with 3:38 left in the first.
That was Max Herz on the call here on 102.5 The Game last night when Cole Smith got the second goal of the night.
His first career multi-goal game, by the way.
Was it really? Good for Cole Smith. And that's the thing, too. You know, I'm not the biggest hockey guy, and I remember talking to you about the Preds roster and how the lineup will fill out. And I'm like, what do you think about this Cole Smith? I mean, do you think that they could use that spot maybe for one of the younger guys to bring up in Milwaukee, yada, yada, yada? Like, do you think he really deserves it? And granted, you defended him. You're like, oh, he does a lot of things that, you know, off puck and just makes kind of like the dirty grunt plays on that really frisky fourth line. But with all that being said, two goals, one of which, you know, was in that greasy area, the first
right.
goal of the game, which, you know, Barry Trotz and Bruno have been talking about. And then that second one on the breakaway, man, that was just beautiful.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a good execution by Cole Smith. And so I originally got this wrong. So I had said that his last multi-goal game came in 2019 when he was with North Dakota still in college.
Mm-hmm.
That was wrong. Aaron Sims from the Milwaukee Admirals, who does play-by-play for radio on their end, told me that it was actually with the Admirals more recently, and I was like, okay, thank you for the update. I appreciate it, albeit the most two recent times was in Milwaukee and then in college for him. So, look, that's it. I think it's happened three times for him in the last, what, like maybe 3 or 4 years. So, good for him, and I think from the perspective of Andrew Brunette, we talked to him earlier this afternoon after skate, and so he said, look, it's really well deserved for him. He got rewarded for his hard work, and so I can tell that Coach Brunette loves what he does day in, day out, his work ethic and everything, Junie.
All in all, you know, the Preds going on the road and just dismantling a cup contender like the New York Rangers are.
I think they're more of a pretender.
You think the Rangers are a pretender?
I think so. As of right now, they don't look like they have anything together right now.
Well, it's early in the season.
Sure,
they still got to develop some time. But again,
their headlines, yes, are more of this could be one of the highest-ranked teams.
Yeah.
For sure.
And they have one of the best goaltenders in the league, similar to the Preds. And,
yep. Just an off night
for
him,
with Sabanajad and company. I mean, that's a really good team. And when they're firing on all cylinders, they are a tough team to beat.
Mm-hmm.
So going into New York and getting a win like that, I felt like was really good for this team because the opening stretch of games, like all the teams that they have played are legitimately really good teams
yeah.
in the league. You know, for this Preds team and how young they are and coming in with a brand new coach, you would rather them kind of have games like they're going to have tomorrow against the San Jose Sharks and teams that are not as competitive or trying to be competitive. But for me, seeing the Preds go on the road and do that was huge. And a guy like Cole Smith getting two goals, the power play goal that I saw, the puck movement there between Forsberg and that pass right there in the middle in front of the crease from Evangelista to Ryan O'Reilly, who put it away. I mean, it just looked like that the entire Predators team were playing their roles, doing their assignment, and playing absolute sound hockey and taking advantage of the opportunities they were getting.
Yeah, and look, that power play that you just laid out, it took them 7 seconds to score after they had the face-off and everything. So they went tic-tac-toe on that. It was a beautiful call by our friend Max Herz, who is in studio with us right now, who's been with filling in for Pete Weber this week. And so Pete will be back tomorrow night for anyone that has not heard that yet, which is great. It's his anniversary as well with his wife, so it's going to be a fun Saturday for Pete Weber. But anyway, I think last night, in terms of what you saw a lot of textbook hockey. You saw what is expected of this group, and that's something that is key for me when watching this group. And so I caught up with Kiefer Sherwood earlier this afternoon and talked to him a little bit about that quote-unquote kid line. And so that's more of what is exciting for Preds fans, the youth. What are they capable of doing? And so I think in that regard, seeing them click, and also Kiefer's a guy that goes up and down the whole ice. He's assertive, he's physical, and he's talented at looking for his teammates, quite frankly. And I think you can plug him in anywhere. He's a spark plug. That's the word that came to mind for me when watching him last night. And look, the Preds generated a lot of chances.
And I told you I liked Kiefer Sherwood. I like Kiefer Sherwood.
Yeah, he's been a great signing. And so, by the way, this is also the longest stint he's had with one NHL team playing-wise, mm-hmm. I believe. And his other longest one would have been with the Anaheim Ducks. And also, Cody Glass got hurt, had three shifts last night, in case anybody missed that. It was hard to pick up on that he left the game. Only three chances to see him. It was weird. I saw just one spot where he kind of had an awkward hit against the wall where he twisted himself. Could have been his leg, his ankle, his knee, something like that. And so he's going to miss the next 7 to 10 days, meaning there's a hole in the lineup. And with Luke Shen out as a scratched player, he's not on injured reserve. So you have originally last night was three scratched with Shen, Fagamo, and Tomasino because McCarron played. Well, now there's a hole. So I caught up with Sam Fagamo as well today really briefly and was asking him how he's felt about, hey, what's been going on with you lately? How have you felt about learning everything? And he feels caught up. I mean, he scored a goal at home during the preseason. He looked like himself when I've gone back and seen some film of him. Not too much, but enough to know that he's got a great shot. So I'm curious to see what decision Andrew Brunette says that he is going to make on Saturday morning. So, Junie, I'm encouraged by this group. I think the first 10 days of the season have just been a microcosm of what you have to expect from a group that's still learning how to be what they need in order to have a strong identity.
Absolutely. Big win for the Preds. And the fourth and final goal, I do want to point out, man, Philip Forsberg, that move that he made in the O-zone there and the screen shot that went right past Shesterkin across his body into that top shelf. Listen, Philip Forsberg, I feel like he's been playing really well and it just really hasn't shown up on the stat sheet every single game. But if Philip Forsberg keeps playing like that offensively like he did last night, man.
He's comfortable now.
This team is looking like it has something. But through five games, the Preds have been up and down. They are 2-3, tough stretch to start the season. There was a healthy scratch last night, and you name drop him, and I want to get into that if that is something that we need to look into. We're also going to break down the Preds through five games, what we like, what they need to improve, and how we feel like this season has gone so far. We will get into that next here on Riddle and the Reporter on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Make your silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 102.5 The Game app as we approach week 8 of college football and week 7 of the NFL. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. So go ahead and head over there and make your picks before the first slate of college games kick off tomorrow. Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter. Junie Riddle, Nick Kiesler here, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studio. We've been talking about the Nashville Predators. Got a huge win last night. They are now sitting at 2-3. And although that record might not sound as good, you got to look at the teams that they have been playing, Tampa Bay Lightning, the Oilers, the Kraken, the Rangers, like they have had a tough go at it to start the year. So sitting at 2-3 and seeing some promise and being very competitive in these games give us some positive outlooks for the Predators in this early season. But something that caught my eye yesterday, Keezer, and we were discussing this a bit in the break, Philip Tomasino was a healthy scratch for the Preds last night. I want to know if you have any inclinations. Have you heard anything? And should Predators fans be concerned about this? Because coming into this season, I felt like Tomasino was going to be one of the more important young players to kind of help this new group come in and be a bigger contributor. Should there be a concern with him being a healthy scratch?
I'll go through it this way, and then I'll answer your question. I just want to kind of walk you through how I was thinking watching the first few games. And the first thing that stands out to me that's very eye-popping is he has 2 shots on net through the entire season so far. Look, it's early. It's very, very early. But when you play on a line primarily with Luke Evangelista and Tommy Novak, for the most part this season, I think that's a concern. If you're not shooting the puck along with your teammates, look, I get it. He also had a couple of great looks in a couple of the home games, I think, and he looked a lot better when he played against Seattle. I thought he looked like the best version of himself so far. I remember talking to him before the Seattle game, and he looked like a confident player. I think he has the charisma to be a consistent skater, but having 2 shots on net through the first few games, it's not enough when you're expected to be a productive player. And Brunette has raved about this kid line, quote unquote. And for me, if he's doing good, he needs to do good in terms of putting the puck on the net. He's a playmaker solely.
And that's what we've seen from a lot of these guys. And that's been the difference in this Nashville Predator offense is that they're putting shot on net as soon as they cross into the O-zone just to get any kind of opportunities. And what has Barry Trotz and Bruno been pushing? Do the dirty work. Get in there when you don't think that there's an opportunity. Fight for the puck. Fight for possession. Fight to get the puck in the greasy area to try and get some cheap goals and some cheap opportunities. And we saw that last night with Cole Smith, and it doesn't seem like Tomasino is necessarily buying into that.
Well,
notion.
I think the stark difference is Tomasino's not going to be as greasy as you think he is. And I love that, like, we sound like we're like the Stoches and the Greasers. I love talking about the Predators like I'm talking about them from the others or from the outsiders. Good gracious. But anywho, I think for Tomasino, to answer your question, just because I wanted to set it up as best as I could, no, I'm not concerned. But you need to make a quick decision on him. Is he going to Milwaukee? Is he going to get more ice time down there? The reason that's tough is look how many guys are in Milwaukee. They put Denis Gerionov through waivers down there because they picked a few guys over him. And so I think that's intriguing because you didn't put Tomasino down. You put Gerionov down, and then you claim Fagamo, who arguably has a better shot than Dennis, but I think that for Brunette, he wants to use Dennis at some point in time when and if he improves enough to come back up. And so I think for Tomasino Junior, it's easy to send him back down. But also, too, we've also heard Barry Trotz talk about how taking your time with prospects. In my eyes, Tomasino is on the edge of not being a prospect anymore. He's not. I think he's played enough in the NHL to where you've seen what he's going to be. And he always, when he's explaining things, I think he sounds very sure of himself. However, it needs to be consistent out on the ice night in and night out. And I think learning the new system, he's already told me himself, that's part of it. It's part of it for everybody. Look, Parson has had a couple of bad games himself, too. I think when you look at the leaders, they're the ones that help elevate these guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the biggest key thing for me is who kind of complements him moving forward.
But again, you brought up Juuso Parsonen. And Parsonen, again, has he had a bad game or two? Sure, he has.
Yeah.
But he's also had two really good games to open up the year as well. So it's the inconsistency for me with – or I guess not even the inconsistency because, again, these are new groups. These are brand new lines, guys that are trying to be, you know, forged and playing together. And we knew that it was going to take some time. But, we're seeing a lot of promise.
Right.
The fact that, you know, Philip Tomasino, a guy that we have seen some, you know, spurts with, a guy that has put up, you know, goals and has had production when given the opportunity, I don't know. I just had the inclination that – he would be a bigger part of this offense. And seeing him on that third line with a Luke Evangelista, with a Tommy Novak, I just felt like that was like he was going to be the guy that they would go to on that particular line as the main scorer, the main offensive contributor, considering Luke Evangelista's only played in, what, like 15 NHL
well,
games?
Well, I would say on that line, Evangelista is going to be that go-to scorer out of the three of them. At some point, I think that's the vision for what you want to see from them.
Yes.
I think Evangelista playing on the wing where he's at now, he's been challenged a lot, I feel like, to make plays on the half wall. He's still a guy that needs to grow into himself.
Yeah.
He's a guy that you know has the skill and has the durability to play at this level now. But I think for Tommy Novak, you know what you got out of Novak, if you ask me. Tommy's going to be consistent up the middle. He's a great power play asset. And I think for Tomasino, he's still learning how to complement them the best way that he can. And I feel like the way that Kiefer Sherwood laid it out to me today makes the most sense. And I want to read what he said because I want to make sure that we get this right. And so I think this will help anyone that's interested in maybe how they think out there on the ice. Here's what I heard from Sherwood earlier today. He said, "I try to create more time and space by getting those pucks back and getting on the forecheck. If I can get the puck back and create the separation, they can work their magic." Right there, for me, right there, that tells me. Time and space is everything. Duh, it's hockey. You need to have that. But I think for this line to be effective, they need to move the puck as best as they can because there's been moments, Junior, where Brunette does not play this line because they're not effective.
Yeah.
So that's a telltale sign for me that if it's not working, other guys are going to be getting ice time.
And it might just be, you know, having an all-ultra-young line might not be the answer. Mixing in some veterans and just not having, you know, them kind of be the ultra-young line compared to everybody else seems to have a quality veteran that is going up against them. So it'll be really interesting going forward. Now, some other things I want to talk about, 2 and 3, we've seen a lot of close games, games that could have gone either way for the Preds.
Absolutely.
We've seen one big loss and one really big victory.
Right.
Or two big victories, I should say, with Seattle and the Rangers. So with all that being said, what do you think that this team is doing well so far, and where do you think they can improve? Because you brought up that they're 4-21.
Yep.
Or 4 out of 21
yep,
on the power
for 21
play.
Four for 21 on the power play. They are third in the NHL in power play opportunities. That's encouraging because you're either drawing penalties or they're just happening. And
yes.
So it's a great sign for that early on. Preds are 19% on the power play. It's not a great output for them as well. I mean, you could be the Blackhawks who are 1 for 22 on the power play, but then again, I think everybody struggles early on to figure out what's going on.
And let's not compare ourselves to the Blackhawks who just had the number one pick in the draft. We should expect this team to be – I shouldn't say we should expect them to make the playoffs, but they need to be in that conversation.
They're in a growth mode, as are the Predators. Much different growth, but then again, Barry Trotz, it's a re-something. So I think their strongest part of the entire team right now is the top six 5-on-5, easily for me. I would say a close first as well is also the penalty kill. I think the penalty kill has looked really sharp this season. And the reason I say that is because of who plays on it. You also go to guys like Carrier and McDonough, who I think have been very underrated. They are not getting enough attention because of how well that they are playing right now, if you ask me. I think Alex Carrier has a night and day difference to him. He had some awful plays against the Oilers. I don't know if you saw McDavid's fall spinorama goal. Like, he was falling and saw the puck because Carrier missed it, and then he picks it up right past him. Because, look, all that Carrier should have done there was play the body or play the puck. Mm-hmm. He didn't pick correctly. He whiffed on the puck. It's like if you had skated by somebody at public skate and they were about to collide with you and they weren't looking, but they just happened to go by you. Like, it was that least expected thing that you so that you were worried in the moment and in the second. But I think that their penalty kill is the strongest. They have looked really good. Sissons has been great. O'Reilly, he's been great.
McDonough has been fantastic.
Has been fantastic all around, I would even say. So I think that's been the strongest part to them as well. Obviously, UC Saros has been stellar so far as well. I wonder if we see Kevin Lankinen in at all tomorrow night. I doubt it. I really do. I would like to see Kevin Lankinen in tomorrow. Maybe we do. There's an off chance that you could see him tomorrow. There was no guarantee from Brunette today. No one asked about the starting lineup. So we'll see if he says anything prior to the game tomorrow. But I think that's the strongest point. I would also say the weakest right now, I would say it is the power play.
Yeah.
I really would. It's not where he wants it to be right now. Meaning Brunette, it's not where he wants it to be, but he's taken responsibility and it has looked really good. They scored two power play goals in MSG. That's encouraging.
Yeah.
So
I feel like it's been getting better. You know, we saw yes. Tommy Novak. He got a power play goal at Bridgestone Arena. I believe that was in the Oilers game, was it not? That was their one. Was that their one goal in the Oilers game?
It was the power play. Yep, that was the power play goal. Yeah, because he was in the slot.
So we're talking about three power play goals in the past two games. So it seems as if they're getting better because, you know, the first power play we saw in Tampa was just – I mean, they couldn't even get it into the ozone in the first, you know, 90 seconds of the power play. So, again, it's going to take some time. It seems to be getting better. But where this team is going, I just feel like it's going to be very interesting. And with San Jose coming in tomorrow night to play them here at Bridgestone Arena, I'm interested to see what this team and their offensive output do to a team that is most definitely inferior to them. So I want to see how the Preds look against inferior talent instead of them trying to match up against some of the better teams in the NHL. One last thing to note, though, Cody Glass did sustain a lower body injury, and he will be out 7 to 10 days. And before we go to break, how do you think that's going to impact the lineup for the next week and a half while he is out?
Well, like I said, I think that you'll see Fagamo and Tomasino get prime opportunity to skate. McCarron, too. And I'm encouraged by having the three guys rotating as forwards. So I don't think it's the worst problem that you could have. Hopefully, Cody Glass returns by next Saturday. I think, yes, the Preds play tomorrow, they play Tuesday, and they play Saturday. They do not have a Thursday game coming up. So he should have plenty of time to come back and play by next Saturday, Junie. So no huge concern there for me.
Okay. Other guys getting opportunities for the Preds. 2-3 start. Looking promising. We will see how they do again against the Sharks tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. Coming up next, though, the Tennessee Vols. It is the third weekend of October, and you know what that means. They are taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide. We are going to get into that matchup and some other college football matchups in the top 25 going down tomorrow. Coming up next here, Junior Real Nick Keys on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tomorrow at 7 p.m. for our college football game of the week, Utah versus USC, presented by Twin Peaks. Take all your tailgate to Twin Peaks for all the scenic views of the hottest college football games across the country and home of the 29-degree beer. Welcome back in to Riddle and the Reporter. Junior Riddle, Nick Keyser here on this Friday evening. Just got done talking some Preds. Now it's time to move to some college football. And for those here around in Tennessee, it's the third weekend in October. And you know what that means. It means the Tennessee Vols are going to take on the Alabama Crimson Tide, and they are playing in Bryant-Denny Stadium down there in Tuscaloosa. Keyser, man, last year's game we had a huge watch party out at New Heights Brewing. And, you know, I was still kind of teaching my wife about football and what it's about and the tradition here in the South. And I remember when we were watching that game, I had never seen her more invested in a football game than that one. And so when I told her that it was this weekend, Tennessee versus Alabama, she's like, can we watch it? Can we watch it? And I was like, whoa. Hey, babe, it ain't going to be the game like it was last year. Because last year was an instant classic. If you played a game like that on the old NCAA football games, that's going to give you a number one rating.
Yes.
And it's going to go down and saved as an instant classic.
Man.
It was great.
It was wonderful last year.
But this year, Nick, I don't know if we're going to get anywhere near the same game.
I don't think so. I mean, look, I think it's easy to say it, but I mean, it is for a reason. I mean, it's not the same quarterback matchup, and I feel like the edge – look, I think the slight edge in defense does go toward the Volunteers. But look, I just feel like the way that Jalen Milroe plays – and like, this might be a called shot, honestly. I don't think either quarterback has over 200 yards passing. Like, I mean, this could be a game that is solely dictated on the weird turnovers – I think we're going to see more field goals than maybe we want to see in a game like this, if you ask me. I could be dead wrong. I could be way off by this. But I think the way that both of these teams have struggled this season, it's either going to be a shootout or it's going to be a really close game that does not involve as many touchdowns as you think. Look, I could realistically see Alabama winning by 10. I could see them maybe scoring a touchdown and tacking something on late possibly. But I think for Tennessee, the main question is how in the world can they get their wide receivers involved, because they have not looked very great this season. But also, too, I think that the way that Joe Milton has thrown the ball so far has not been as encouraging by any means. Look, he can chuck an orange however far it is. This ain't it, Chief. You got to really shine on the road. Easily the biggest game for a lot of these cats. It's going to be a fun one.
And outside of the Florida game, I feel like this is, you know, I mean, clearly, I mean, it's Alabama. You're playing in Alabama. It's going to be one of your hardest games of the year.
No doubt.
You know, getting A&M at home, I felt like the A&M game, and we talked about this last week, it was a very evenly matched. I felt like if Tennessee were to play at A&M in College Station, I would have favored the Aggies.
Sure.
You know, they played in Neyland, and the defense got it done, forced a couple turnovers to seal it. This is just completely different. And the way that I saw Tennessee play against Florida, and now we know exactly what Florida is, I don't know if I give Tennessee much of a shot in this game.
I really don't.
Alabama still has premier talent all over their defense. And I know that Tennessee's defense has been playing a lot better this season than it did last. And we're not talking, again, this is a completely different game. But for me, in the way that Joe Milton has been playing and against the teams that he's been playing against, I don't see really a way that Tennessee gets the win unless we see the Joe Milton that we saw in the Orange Bowl last year against Clemson.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't want to say he's been a shell of himself since then, Junie, but I feel like going into a season as a starting quarterback, sort of as the undoubted starter for Tennessee, and it's been clear that he's been the most reliable to this point because they haven't gone to Nico whatsoever, but not saying that you'll see Nico, because I highly doubt you see him in this game.
I would say this. If they lose to Bama in Georgia, okay, I'm pulling the Tennessee schedule up right now. If you lose to Bama, and well, you got a few weeks until Georgia. I thought the Georgia game was a little bit closer.
It is a little farther away.
If you lose to Bama, I would say the Kentucky game has to be the indicator.
I think that they could beat Kentucky, though. I think that they could.
I think they can beat Kentucky, too. I don't think Kentucky is as good as we thought. I think Georgia kind of exposed them, and then they put up the performance against Missouri. Connor's giving me a look right now. Listen, I'm just stating out the facts. If they lose to Kentucky and they lose to Alabama, you got to be looking at Nico against UConn.
Mm-hmm.
I like you just have to. I mean, that would be the perfect game to put him in. Then you go on the road to Mizzou. You got Georgia. I don't really care who you have at quarterback. I don't think you beat Georgia.
Nope.
And then you end the year with Vanderbilt. I mean, Missouri's defense is really bad. UConn's not a good team. Vanderbilt's not a good team. So you're talking about three out of the last four games. If Joe Milton's not the answer, and you know he's not, and Nico's looking good in practice, because, again, I don't know how Nico's looking in practice, but if he is, then you got to play him in these final four games.
I don't know about the Missouri game, to be honest with you.
Missouri's defense is awful.
Their defense may be bad, but I feel like the way that they play offense, they've looked better than people thought.
Well,
and I think
it's not about that. I'm worried about Nico. If they were to transition to Nico, I want him to have the confidence going forward, because it's a huge step. I would argue it is much harder for a quarterback to go from high school to adapt to college
than
it is for him to go to college and adapt to the NFL.
Do you think you would give maybe the one game to him being Vanderbilt? I mean, you could start him against a team that you would think is easy. They also play UConn, so that might be a good one for him.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if Tennessee loses to Alabama and then you go on the road and lose to Kentucky.
Yep.
I think that's when you go, okay, maybe Joe Milton's not the answer. Because, again, 100 yards passing, 50% completion rate against Texas A&M.
Right.
And, again, we saw Jalen Milroe, the quarterback that you're about to go up against,
yep,
have his best game against this Texas A&M team,
mm-hmm,
on the road, which is a tough place to play there in College Station.
Yep.
And he had his best game. And then you followed up at home with that crowd in that kind of environment, and you don't show up and play like that. I would make the move. If they drop this to Alabama and he still looks bad against Kentucky and they lose that game, I'm looking at that UConn game at home, and I'm saying,
sure,
bring in the kid.
Sure.
Bring in the kid.
So Phil agrees with my sentiment, by the way, on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. He says, you are out of your mind if you think Mizzou is an easy win.
I never said that. I said their defense sucks. And their defense does suck. They're in shootouts every single week. Missouri has a great offense.
Sure.
Their quarterback has looked fantastic this year. I'm not saying Missouri is an easy win. I'm saying that's a defense that, for a freshman quarterback that hasn't gotten any playing time yet, I'm saying that that defense doesn't scare me to where he's going to get tormented by a pass rush or throw, you know, two or three interceptions,
sure,
and hurt his confidence at the end of the year. That's what I'm saying. Missouri is a very good team, but their defense lets up a lot of points, and I think that if you were to put the freshman in there, again, it's not going to be a defense that's going to go out and kill him.
No.
Like it would. Again, Georgia, that's a different story. That's the one thing that has me hesitant about putting him in against UConn, but again, I'm still looking at three out of the final four games to where it could be a favorable matchup for a young quarterback.
Yeah, it should be fun. So we'll see how it shakes out. But truth be told, I mean, we'll see how it shakes out for them against Alabama, because that's what they have to worry about in front of them. So we'll have to find out, Junie. Will they be able to break out the cigars yet again, or will it be Dixieland delight for a good reason down there? We'll have to find out.
I would love to see the Vols win, because I'm not a big Alabama guy. So I would like to see the Vols kind of go down there and do it. Prove me wrong, Tennessee. Prove me wrong. Hour number one is in the books. Coming up in hour number two, we are going to dive all in to the Tennessee Titans, where they are. We're going to talk about quarterbacks, who needs to play coming out of this bye week, and has Mike Vrabel lost the locker room? We will get into all of that coming up in hour number two. Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.